We're in the third John, and let's go ahead and I'm going to read the first four verses of third John, and we'll get started. It says, "The elder to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth. Beloved, I pray that in all respects you may prosper and be in good health, just as your soul prospers. For I was very glad when brethren came and testified to your truth, that is, how you are walking in truth. I have no greater joy than this, to hear of my children walking in the truth." And so here we see that this book is written to what seems to be an individual and not to a church. And as we go through this book, there's going to be kind of three characters that are in this book. The first one is Gaius, which is who the book is written to. The other person is Diotrephes, who is apparently not acting the way he should. And also there's going to be a third person, Demetrius, there at the end. So John addresses Gaius as someone that he loves in the truth and that he prays that he prospers in all respects. And I think about this, in all respects of life, that would be, you know, his family life, his business life, his physical well-being, his spiritual life. And so this general thing, he's praying for everything good, you know, in all aspects of his life for this Gaius. And he also says here that he prays that you may be in good health just as your soul prospers. Now, I want to think about that just for a second. If someone were to say to one of us, "I hope your health, your physical health is as good as your spiritual health." I'm not exactly sure that's what he's saying, but that's the question that the idea I'm proposing. How would we feel about that as an individual? Would we be maybe concerned? Oh, because I know my spiritual health is weak. I hope I'm actually better physically than spiritually because I don't want to be sick. I think it just goes to the idea that what we need to change the focus on. If I knew that the doctor told me that I needed to eat better and exercise more, that may motivate me to exercise more and eat better. But if we look at our spiritual life, when we go to the doctor and see, you know, what it says we need to do, that needs to also motivate us even more so than what the doctor tells us. DMC?
Yes, Brother. As you read there, Kevin, starts out verse 3 with 4, in view of, you know, he starts out, he says, you know, I hope you're in good health as your soul prospers. He's not sure about his physical health. He hopes it's good. He says, but I'm confident of this, your soul is prospering. You know, that spiritually, you're in good condition. And I think he says that in view of what he's about to say. You know, I've heard really, really good things about, you know, all of these works of faith that you're doing to help other people. So it seems to me that's what he's saying, is I know, I'm confident that spiritually, you know, you're running well. That engine's running well. Hopefully, your physical health is good.
Yeah, so he recognizes because of the testimony that people have come back and given him that he is doing well spiritually. So he's hoping that his health is as well. Very good point. Thank you. Also, he gives a great joy here in verses 3 and 4. It says, "I was very glad when the brethren came and testified to your truth. That is how you're walking truth. I have no greater joy than this, to hear my children walking in the truth." And we think about the things that we take joy in knowing in this life, how much joy we should take in knowing when someone that we know or have acquaintance with or have studied the Bible with is doing well spiritually, whether that be, you know, someone at a faraway church or a local church, anybody that we know, whenever we hear of them doing well spiritually, that should give us joy. Eddie?
Parent and how they would feel when they see their children succeed in physical things and material things, how much more should we take joy in seeing someone that we have taught the gospel to, that we are their spiritual father in the sense that we ever want to show them the truth? How much more should we rejoice in seeing their spirits succeed in the spiritual world?
Yeah, exactly. And how many times have we known maybe brothers that have, you know, an issue with another brother, and they're not going to be joyous when they see them or hear of them doing well spiritually. And so that would come back directly to our attitude. We see that John had this proper attitude. We need to have that attitude as well. Any other thoughts or comments? We're going to go through this. Go ahead, Dempsey.
There's one other here. I noticed in verse 3, this says walking in truth, not the article the truth. It just says walking in truth. In verse 4, he'll say walking in the truth. So you've got the article there. It seems to me he's saying he's commending his life. He's living the word. In verse 3, you're living the word, walking the truth. And then in verse 4, you've got the article, you're following the right standard. You're hearing the truth, the well of truth. That's why you're walking in truth, because you're hearing the right standard.
Yeah, the standard that John had taught them and given them. All right, thank you. Any other thoughts or comments? All right, as you can tell, I'm probably going to go through this rather quickly, and we're going to sing a few songs at the end. But anyway, beginning in verses, we're going to read verse 5 through 8. It says, "Beloved, you are acting faithfully in whatever you accomplish for the brethren, and especially when they are strangers. And they have testified, they have testified to your love before the church. You will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. For they went out for the sake of the name, accepting nothing from the Gentiles. Therefore, we ought to support such men so that we may be fellow workers with the truth." And so here's this thing. He assures him that he's acting faithfully in what he's doing. And that's going to, I think, become important as we go on and read. Because it seems to me there's this other fellow, Diotrephes, who is doing something what seems to be the opposite of what Gaius is doing here. So he is assuring him, giving him this assurance that you are doing what's right. And so there's this conflict between these two brothers that are doing something that's different. And if you've ever been in conflict with somebody over doing something that's different, you have to go back to the source, which is the Bible, and, you know, follow that pattern. And so maybe this Gaius is, you know, struggling, you know, maybe he's doesn't have a powerful personality or something, but he goes back and he reassures him, just like we did back in 1 John. He was reassuring these Christians that they were doing what's right when these other people were leaving. So I think he is giving Gaius some confidence. And we all know that when we're in a difficult situation, we need confidence and we want to know we're doing what's right. Because if you're honest with yourself and you're wanting to do what's right and you find out that what you thought or believed is wrong and you want to change that, right? And so this idea that I think that he's giving Gaius this confidence that he assures him of what he's doing, what's right. You are acting faithfully and what you're accomplishing. Then he says, especially when they are strangers. Now, as we go on to read, we're going to understand that what's happening is Gaius is accepting these missionaries or traveling preachers that are going out and traveling around preaching, and he is accepting them into his home. And so some of these people, it says he doesn't know. It's easy a lot of times for us to accept somebody that we know into our home, right? If one of the, I'll use for example, if Chase Byers, somebody we support, is traveling through this area, It's not going to be hard for me to let Chase stay with me. It's not going to be hard for me to provide meals for his family. You know why? Chase is my nephew. I love Chase. He's my family. It's not going to be hard for me to accept somebody else that was, you know, David Norfleet was a member here. He's a minister now. If David Norfleet was traveling through, wouldn't it be hard for me? He's got a lot of kids, but it wouldn't be hard for me to accept David and Anna Lauren to my house and, you know, provide meals for them and be hospitable to them. But if somebody I never met or heard of come through teaching the truth, you know, we're like, I don't know. It's a little more difficult, isn't it? And it's just natural human nature, right? To be, it says, we see this Gaius is accepting these men, even though they're strangers, but yet they're still teaching the truth as, you know, as what, from what we can see here. And so he assures him that he's doing the right thing by accepting this. And then it says, and they have testified to your love before the church. All right. So these men who he had accepted into his house, provided for, you know, given hospitality to these guys while they're out preaching, doing God's work, they've gone back to where John's at, apparently, and have testified. Now, I don't think that means they got up and swore like an oath in front of a group. I think that means they've come back and they have, you know, given their account. You know, while we were there, Gaius, you know, he had us in. He took care of us. He provided for what we need. And so he's given, you know, so John knows that, and these men have come back and told him. That's how John knows that his soul is prospering, I'm sure, because, you know, he's gotten word back from them. He doesn't have a, you know, a way to communicate with him like we have now, but he was getting this word back from these traveling missionaries or preachers, these guys going out doing God's will. And so we see that in verse 6. It says, you do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. I also want to just remind you, I wrote in my notes here, that if we remember, you know, this idea that, you know, that we said we may have entertained angels and not know it, is the idea that if we're taking care of these men while they're doing this work, then we're, you know, taking care of Christ, because these men are doing Christ's work. If that makes sense to you, Eddie?
Of course, that's what Jesus tells us in Matthew 25. When he guides the sheep and the goat, he talks about the fact that you took care of me when I was making defending lives and so forth. And then he said, if you did it for these, the least of my children, you did it for me. And Gaius is doing that for Jesus. Other people, but he's doing it for Jesus.
Yeah, because they're doing his work. And if we also, if we look back over in 2 John in verse 10, here's the idea. If anyone, go back up, if anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house and do not give him a greeting. So here John is telling these people not to accept these people into your house, because why? They were teaching a false doctrine. They were, as I understand, they were teaching that, you know, Jesus wasn't the Christ. Now he's saying you're doing well because you are accepting these people into your house because they are, you know, that they are bringing the truth and the true doctrine. And so, and also here in verse 6, I think it's something that's very interesting. It says, you will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. To me, when it says he's sending them on their way, that doesn't just mean he's, they get to, he lets them leave, right? If I'm going to send you to do something, what am I going to do? If I'm going to send somebody to the store to get milk and eggs, typically, you're going to provide them with the means that they need to get what they're doing. So these men will be, he's going to be sending them on their way to presumably the next town or the next group of people. If you're doing that, I think he is some way providing something for them, at least for their journey, right? And so this idea that he's sending them on their way, and there's something interesting, in a manner worthy of God. Now, what do we think that would mean? A manner worthy of God.
I think about that. So that parable of all the people who passed by the person laying half dead on the road, but then the Samaritan came and picked him up and took him to the inn and said, here's all I got. If you need anything else, charge it to my account. Provide this man with more than just what you think you can give
him. Yeah, more than the bare essentials, right?
Yeah.
And the idea that he's, and if he needs more, then I'll take care of him. And so I think that's the idea that he is not just giving him, you know, sit down, what's going to take you is 27 miles to the next town, so you need 4 gallons of gas, and we're going to, you know, bare essentials. I think he's, in a manner, you know, make sure they got enough. Make sure they're adequately provided for, I think is what he's saying. I think that's the idea that I get that, you know, Gaius is doing here. Any other thoughts, Chris?
The point I see that's important is in verse 3 and verse 6, he talks about how those people testify of your love and of how they're so it's true. And to me, it's important to encourage others and to let them know like just how well we're doing. Because, I mean, sometimes we struggle when we need to hear that.
Okay, and the idea that we need to encourage others, because we don't know, you know, what everybody's going through, obviously. But if we see somebody doing well, I guess we need to, you know, give them that praise and that, you know, and if we hear, you know, if we hear about somebody that's doing well, encourage them that way, because we all need encouragement, right? Because it's easy to get discouraged when we don't, not that we are waiting for that pat on the back, but just something to keep us going. Any other thoughts here on verse 6? All right, let's look at verse 7. It says, "For they went out for the sake of the name, accepting nothing from the Gentiles." Why did they go out? What does it say here in verse 7? For the sake of the name. I think it's pretty clear. Yes?
And then they're like, okay, if you can just give me some donations. That really turns people off. I mean, you know, our human is going to go up and listen to somebody, and they're like, wow, that's kind of good. Interesting. But then wait a minute. Can you want $20 for me because I just sat here and listened to you? You sound like you're selling a video thing. Like, if you have a great deal or something, I think I need to go home and do other things or whatever. It's going to take the importance of the message back down to, well, this guy's trying to sell me a candle, well, this guy's trying to sell me whatever number I have other things I need to go with him. And so this way, they can really focus on just preaching the word and really focus on this is the important thing I'm trying to teach the people. Not, oh, by the way, when now that I'm done with my business, this is like one of those long hippo rituals. And now I'm going to tell you all about the greatness of this product. And now I need $50. Everybody who's listening, I need $50. And yeah, that's
not funny. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Because, you know, he says, you know, they go out for the sake of the name, which is clearly Jesus Christ. They're going out to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. And it says that they're accepting nothing from the Gentiles. And just the way that Paul oftentimes would work and wouldn't accept, you know, support from somebody else. If they're going out and trying if they're going out and trying to spread the gospel in the Gentile community, if they're going out and needing, you know, like you said, $50, or maybe I need to spend the night at your house now, right? Instead of that, now they've been provided, they've been sent out by these men, and they've been provided with the things that they need, you know, to do the work, which is the work of spreading the gospel. Matt?
Those functions in the church, so that was not as unusual a transition, but for Gentiles, who either are learning about the Lord for the first time or don't have those concepts already in place, that's a bigger match than it's a transition that the Gentiles have to make. So getting used to the Lord and concepts and the religion being taught to them, it helps make that easier for them to make the transition and get into it, so that they can start thinking about the mindset without having to immediately impose something like that. So there's that lowering barrier of entry so they can stay in the church before it ends, while they're working.
Okay, very good point. Any other thoughts or questions? And then if we look there at verse 8, it says, therefore we ought to support such men. So here we have authority to send money to congregations so that they can pay their preachers. Is that what that says? No. It says, therefore, we ought to support such men. So do we have the authority to send money to Muhammad Massakoi in Sierra Leone so that he can preach the gospel? Eddie?
Well, absolutely. What I find interesting here is, out at the beginning of the letter, this is written to an individual.
Uh-huh.
So often we just got in our mind that if the preacher's going to be supporting, he's got to get money from the congregation. That's not necessarily true. This is written to an individual, and he's telling the individual we should support such men as this. It's absolutely scriptural, biblical, for us to individually, if we think somebody is worthy of support, if we think the work they're doing is something that's effective in God's kingdom, then by all means, we can take our money and give it to them to support them.
Exactly. Well, in case you couldn't hear, Eddie's saying that, you know, this is giving, you know, an example of an individual, not just a congregation. You know, if we know of a person that's out trying to spread the gospel, you know, I can send him, you know, support money. And this is encouraging me to do that. Jared? It's true. Exactly. Or if you're in battle and you don't get your supply shipment, it's going to be hard to fight that battle, isn't it? If you don't get food, soldiers, you know, I guess I've heard it runs on his stomach, right? So if you don't get that, it's going to be hard for you. So if a person is out working, trying to spread the gospel, if we have a preacher that's, you know, maybe gone to an area where there's not a lot of Christians and he can't even survive, he's got to have to do something to feed himself and his family. So we this is, you know, encouraging us to support these individuals so that they can do that. And then in verse 8 it says, therefore we ought to support such men so that we may be fellow workers with the truth. This is very interesting. You compare that back over to 2 John, whenever the people, he was telling them not to accept these people with false doctrines into their homes. He says in verse 11, for the one who gives him a greeting participates in his evil deeds. Over here, he tells us that when we're supporting men that are teaching the truth, they were fellow workers with them. It's the idea that, you know, we're making that possible when we support somebody and we can share in that with them, and that can be part of the work. Not that that is going to allow us, this concept is of us, you know, if I send some money to this preacher, that excuses me from spreading the gospel, right? Is that what that says? It's not what that says. Not that we can pay somebody to, you know, to be an evangelist for us. We still have to be doing that ourselves, but we're also, you know, we're sharing in this work with them. We're helping them to support that. Any other thoughts or comments on this section here about Gaius? All right, let's move on to verses 9 through 11 then. I wrote something to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first among them, does not accept what we say. For this reason, if I come, I will call attention to his deeds, which he does unjustly, accusing us with wicked words, and not satisfied with this, he himself does not receive the brethren either, and he forbids those who desire to do so and puts them out of the church. Beloved, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. The one who does good is of God. The one who does evil has not seen God. So we really don't have a lot of context over who Gaius is and who Diotrephes is. And if you read some stuff, there's people that, you know, there are so many Gaiuses that are mentioned in the Bible, but not that we don't really know any of those people. But so here we know that apparently, let's just assume that these guys, Gaius and Diotrephes, are members of the same church, leaders of the same church, maybe leaders of different churches that are close to each other. But anyway, they have this conflict here. And it's, and John tells them that he had written something to them already. And this person, Diotrephes, it says, who loves to be first among them. This is a person who wants to be exalted in front of men. He wants to be a leader. He wants to be in charge. He wants to be, you know, he wants his way, is the idea that I get from that. And it says that he does not accept what we say. Now, do we have to accept what somebody says? Why do they need to accept what John says? He's an apostle. You know, he's inspired by God. He has revelation from God. So thinking about that today, we don't accept what Bill, just to make somebody up over here, says. We have to accept what's written in the Bible. And so he tells them he doesn't accept God's word, I think would be a better way for us to understand that today. He doesn't accept that, and he goes against that. How can we not accept God's word today, in a way? Good comment. He's, you know, he's taking his opinion over God's opinion, right? and he's put himself. And when we do that, we're not only exalting ourselves in front of people, we're trying to exalt ourselves in front of God, which never is going to work out very well. So anyway, he has this teaching, and you know, he says that he doesn't accept what they say. And then John says, for this reason, if I come, I will call attention to his deeds, which he does unjustly, accusing us with wicked words. And not satisfied with this, he himself does not receive the brethren and forbids those who desire to do so. So in doing, putting his own opinion first, he has basically gone and done the exact opposite of what he should be doing, right? For whatever reason, whether he's not accepting them about, you know, this teaching of Jesus, you know, being the Son of God, we don't know exactly for sure what the teaching was that he was teaching was different, but he is refusing to let the people that have come to preach the true gospel stay in his house to support them. And then it says he's even going to the point of putting the people out of the church that are doing that. So that would give us the indication that he has some type of power that he's accumulated or authority in the church. And some people read will say that maybe even this Gaius and Diotrephes were maybe elders of this church, and that maybe Diotrephes had somehow was gotten through his personality, was, you know, doing this over Gaius, who was doing what was right. But we don't know if that's for true. That's just somebody's subjection.
What we find is Diotrephes is trying to remake the church in his image instead of letting it be in the image of Christ. That's, you know, he's trying to control everybody to make them all think the way he thinks. If they don't think the way he thinks, he tries to exclude them from the church.
All right, very good point. And if we see, if we have leadership or elders, or, and this idea that if they start doing something like that, going astray, teaching a false doctrine, trying to use their personality to control the church, put people out of the church that aren't doing what they want them to do, you know, through what it, you know, through something that's, you know, that's like this, where they're doing what's right and they're punishing them for that. What should we as Christians do? What did John say he was going to do when he got there? He says, I will call attention to his deeds. Now that's, you know, maybe that was Gaius's weakness. Maybe he wasn't strong enough, his personality or something, to stand up and call attention to his deeds. We know that John obviously has the authority, and hopefully the people there in the church would recognize his authority. So we see, I think that as Christians, if we see that going on, and that's hard to do, isn't it? To stand up and say, hey, this isn't right what you're doing. Yes? Yeah, because what about the condition of the souls he's put out of the church? You know, where have they gone? Where, you know, hopefully they're still in Christ and maybe have even formed a group together, but we can't allow someone to come in and change God's word and try to force something like that upon everybody else, or do something that's not right. Chris?
That's part of love. I mean, just loving people causes you to look out after their well-being, see them in error. You want them to get back on walking in
That would be the love for Diotrephes, to correct him, right? Yeah. Not just to, not the motive, not to throw him out of the church, but to get him to change and to correct him so that he could be, have a right relationship with Christ. All good comments. Anybody else? All right, let me figure out where I'm at. I think we're down here to verse 11. It says, "Beloved, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. The one who does good is of God. The one who does evil has not seen God." I think this is referring to how he expects Gaius to react to what Diotrephes is doing. Don't imitate him. Don't use his methods, maybe. But imitate what's good and do what's right. Then he goes on to say, the one who does evil has not seen God. And we've talked about that earlier. And then just kind of, you know, closing this book out. Now we're introduced to this fellow Demetrius, and he gives us all kinds of background information on Demetrius, so we know all about him. It says, Demetrius has received a good testimony from everyone and from the truth itself. If we add our testimony and you knowing that our testimony is true. So who is this Demetrius? There's a lot of people that I've read a few things. Some people thought maybe Demetrius was a person that brought the letter to Gaius. I don't know that intuitively made that much sense to me. It almost seemed to me, now I could be wrong, so that maybe Demetrius was a fellow worker there with Gaius who also had received testimony back to John. And he's maybe giving him somebody that he can rely on, maybe go to for help, work together with. I could be wrong about that. And he says, you know, Demetrius has received good testimony from everyone. I think that's referring maybe back to the same people that had given testimony about Gaius to John. And then it says that John, you know, adds his testimony, and then he qualifies his testimony because he's an apostle, I think. It says, you know that our testimony is true. Anybody else have any other opinions of Adam?
Just because of the proximity to Diotrephes, it's also possible that Demetrius could be somebody that Diotrephes tried to put out. And so John is vouching for him to Gaius and saying, you need to start taking care of this. When I come, I'll remind him of what's right. But, you know, he focuses a lot on Demetrius' character. And right after saying that Diotrephes just puts people out just at his whim, you know. So it's very possible it's been, you know.
Okay, it could be. Yeah, it could be that, let me get these names right. Demetrius is one that's been put out, and he's saying, you know, he's a good man. This is somebody that you know, the idea. Any other thoughts or comments on maybe who Demetrius was? There is one interesting thing I think I'd like to see in the future. I know there are several families in here expecting. These are some wonderful names. I would like to see a Demetrius here one day or a Gaius. So you have my blessing if you want to use those. I think Matthew, maybe your family's expecting. Maybe a middle name. Okay. So then he goes on to finish up the letter. It says, I had many things to write to you, but I'm not willing to write them to you with pen and ink, but I hope to see you shortly and will speak to you face to face. Peace be with you. The friends greet you. And greet the friends by name. So here we have this, you know, this concluding verses of this letter that he has many things. This is a pretty short letter to you know, cover probably a difficult topic. I mean, there's probably even other things there that he wants to talk to him about. And he says he's not willing to do that, but he wants to see them and speak to you face to face. And he's talking about how he's hoping to see him shortly. Does anybody have any other comments or Matt?
This is quite a bit like Jude's letter where false teachers are coming in. This is so important and so crucial to stand out that it's like, there are other things I didn't talk to you about, kind of like Jude does. He starts parents that are going to say, I have visions I want to talk to you about, but this took priority. So this shows the importance and how rampant false teachers were, and that it took the priority. We'd rather not talk to them over a letter, but because of the importance of this, he made sure that the letter was written and sent, and that people would vouch so that he would verify or send. So just wanted to throw that in.
Okay, yeah, and these, you know, this false teachers is only was a problem back in, you know, the early New Testament. We don't have that problem today to worry about. But it's clear that's wrong. So we have to continually be looking for false doctrine. And another thing that I thought interesting, I mentioned this earlier, is this letter is written to this individual, you know, is this trying to motivate this, instead of the whole church is being, you know, read to the whole church, you know, Diotrephes and the other people, this is written as individual, trying to encourage him to stand up and to get the, you know, the church there, you know, back on the right track and try to save Diotrephes from, you know, wreaking any more havoc is the idea. Maybe why this is written just specifically to this one individual. This concludes my class. Matt is going to, like I said earlier, is going to pick us up in 1 Peter next Sunday. We have got, Evan's going to lead us in some songs here before we close. So, Evan, are you ready? All right, well, go ahead. Evan will lead us in a few songs. You want to do that from up there?
Number 164, Give Thanks with a Grateful.